Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. Today, I'm welcoming back an old friend, one of our very, very first GeoMob Podcast guests all the way back in 2020, Joanna Simoes, who... has been on the podcast before. I went and looked, Joanna. You are a 5-time GeoMob speaker, which is very, it gets you into the upper ranks. And of course, what we're going to talk about today is the fact that you are one of the organizers of GeoMob Lisbon, which is coming up in the very near future. So I had the great pleasure to attend GeoMob Lisbon last October, so almost 1 year ago. And I had a wonderful time, and I wanted to get you on the show to tell us all about what's happening in Lisbon, what the scene is there, what people can expect at GeoMob Lisbon, and give you a chance to share all the great work you guys are doing there. So welcome back to the show, Joanna.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
So when and where is the next GeoMob Lisbon?
Yes, so the next GeoMob will be on the 2nd of October. It's a Wednesday at usual time, 6 p.m. And it will be downtown Lisbon in Baixa.
It's the same location where when I was there a year ago in that kind of co-working space kind of is that where it's going to be?
It was supposed to be there, but I think we're having a conflict, so we might need to relocate. But we want to be in a nearby venue because we like so much the place where we go afterwards.
Yes, a very, very nice pub or bar or whatever.
Exactly.
Also very, very, very pleasant evening. Okay, so what can attendees expect? What do we have on the agenda here for the next GeoMob Lisbon?
So they can expect a diverse set of presentations. So we have anything. So we have like a project that is about navigating with bicycles. We have another project which is like a crowdsource app for news. And we have something that is more like in the realm of geomarketing. And then finally, we have one speaker that I have no idea what he's going to talk about, but I know him as a person, and I just give him the time to speak.
Very good. So a very eclectic mix of interesting, diverse projects of not just kind of straight GIS type projects, but how people are actually using geospatial to build interesting tools and services. So fantastic.
Exactly. So basically, to answer your question, they can expect these presentations and then some discussion, not much, but some questions, of course. And then the best part, we go all together to this nice bar in the neighborhood, and then we continue this conversation until we want to. And I think that's one of the best parts of GeoMob.
That's the second half, of course. I mean, the first half is the talks, which are for learning, but I find the talks are a good way to learn new things, but also just the conversation starters that you then have in the
Correct.
Second half.
Right? Like so, an icebreaker.
So, Joanna, you have been all around. You lived in London for a long time. You studied there at UCL, which obviously has a long connection with GeoMob. We met when in Barcelona, where you have been at GeoMob Barcelona many times as a speaker, as an attendee, and now you live in Lisbon and are working on Lisbon. How is Lisbon different than, or what is the geospatial scene in Lisbon?
Yeah, so Lisbon, I mean, funny enough, I'm from Lisbon originally, but I lived longer in these other cities that you mentioned than in Lisbon. I mean, obviously, I lived in Lisbon when I was growing up, but I was not attending the geo scene. So I'm more familiar with London and Barcelona. So Lisbon is still like a question mark for me, But one thing that I see is that it's growing a lot. So I have this sense that things are popping up in the tech scene in general, not only in geo. So I think that's very exciting. I think there's a lot of innovation. And this is very recent. I would say it's probably like in the past 5 years that is been happening.
I have the impression Lisbon has done a very good job of getting, let's say, from Northern European companies to have, or international tech companies to have offices there and R&D type things and development teams in. And then I always hear about the digital nomads passing yes. through Portugal and things like that. So it does seem like there's quite a lot happening there. That there's a
which previously I think Barcelona had this kind of appeal to people as well. But I feel like Barcelona was being losing this type of position. What do you think? What's your feeling?
Hard to say, but. I it does feel like Lisbon. I hear about Lisbon a lot, and a lot of things happening in Lisbon. Conferences in Lisbon, which was what I mean. Last year when I was there for a big conference, and then we were able to combine, yes. GeoMob afterwards and things. I mean, it just feels like a place that people want to be because there's a lot happening there. So, has that played out in the geospatial scene at all? I mean, are there interesting geospatial startups or?
Yeah, so the geospatial scene is interesting because from what I remember before, it was basically GIS companies. So you had like these GIS consulting companies. They were like traditional GIS. So there was basically it. And I think recently what I see is other companies that are not GIS, they may be tech companies, or maybe they're not even tech companies, they're other types of companies, but they are using geo. And they are using not all the range of geospatial functionality, but they are using one thing, like let's say like geocoding or geofencing, and they get very deep into this thing. And they can be even like, you know, very innovative in terms of technology or standards or something like that. And you also see that on the startups.
Yeah, I mean, as you may know, that's always been the thing that I find most interesting is that where non-geospatial companies or organizations take the technology and take the innovation and start, you know, using it in new ways, mixing it with their existing services and rolling it out kind of to the normal people or in use cases that the traditional GIS mindset never really contemplated, maybe.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that happens a lot in startups, and Lisbon has a vibrant startup scene because there's related to the Web Summit. There's like an incubator here, and there are a lot of companies that are, as you mentioned, they are relocating here. But I think in terms of geospatial thinking. There's a challenge for these companies because maybe they don't have any background, so they have the risk of run into the risk of reinventing the wheel. I mean, I think the most relevant example, I'm sure you encountered this many times as well, and I did it myself, is like when you don't know anything about geo and then you want to calculate the distance between two points. And they are in latitude and longitude, so decimal degrees, and then you use the Pythagoras theorem. So you consider the distance is linear. And of course, I mean, if you are looking at points that are very close, the error is small, but if you are going across the globe, this is a huge error, right? So if people don't know this, they use this, and then they understand, oh no, it's spherical. So they think, okay, I'm going to do spherical calculations. It's an extremely complicated thing. But coordinate systems already exist. There are great libraries, like even open source libraries that implement them. So if you know about these things, you know that it's not a good idea to do it yourself, right?
Very ironic, Shauna, because I remember when I was in Lisbon last year, you know, we did the boat tour on the river, and of course you see the iconic, that big statue of all the Portuguese explorers going out to explore the world. And, you know, many of the foundational discoveries in navigation happened through the Portuguese, of course, leading to these long ocean voyages and things like that. So surely if anyone can measure distances across the globe, it should, of course, be our Portuguese colleagues.
Yeah.
But
yeah, but I mean, this is not this is not limited to Portugal. But I see this kind of thing happening in people that do not come from the geo background, and this is like an extreme example. And
it's true. Yeah.
I like GeoMob to be a venue for bringing together all these people, so that they can talk to each other and learn with each other, and understand that there are already maybe like ways of solving these problems that are very good, and no one needs to be reinventing the wheel in a way that is not productive or efficient.
Yeah, I could not agree more. That is exactly the magic of GeoMob. And that's why I'm delighted that you kind of took up the task of getting GeoMob Lisbon going. We should also mention you're of course, co-organizer, Miguel, who is helping you there. I completely agree. This is exactly the magic of when different people with different perspectives and different, on the one hand, we need the formal background of the GIS people, but on the other hand, you need the fresh perspective of the startup people. And when those two come together is when it gets very interesting. And ideally combine that also with people like artists or people all across doing anything related to location.
I would love to have more artists coming to GeoMob. Do you get a lot?
We have had some in London, but not enough. I mean, I would like to have more as well. Ranging all the way from, people, actual like cartographers who like draw maps, hand-drawn
maps. Designers. Yeah.
But designers, but I mean also much more like true artists type people who are,
performance or installations.
Performers or things like that. If you have a second, I can tell you about one of the craziest talks we ever had. This was in London. So this was quite odd. This guy was an academic, but they were working. It was an academic project working with artists, if I understand correctly. And the idea was they wanted to, I'm probably grossly misrepresenting this, but the fundamental idea was they wanted to make a forest, a line forest. So a straight line forest. Okay. Where like basically a row of trees. And they wanted to do this all across the full length of Britain. Okay, oh, wow. So the first they had to calculate what is the longest possible line across Britain. And the idea was that every 10 meters there would be a tree. Okay. And so they calculated this line, and that was kind of the geospatial aspect to it. But then obviously you have this problem that the line is going to be crossing existing buildings and roads and all these kinds of things. So in some places they actually planted the trees, but in some places they couldn't plant the trees because it's private property or there's already construction. So the idea was that they would then create virtual trees. So there would be virtual trees that you could kind of see with virtual reality or something. And then it got weirder and weirder from there. Like at every point it just kept getting, so each tree, each virtual tree, I think every tree, including the virtual trees, was going to have its own song.
Oh, wow.
So then they wrote, I mean, we're talking about, I don't know how many tens of thousands of trees here, of course. And actually, I think now that I think about it, I think they only planted the trees in the straight line in like 1 or 2 kilometers. You know, that was all the budget they had. And the idea was that that was the prototype and the rest were just going to be virtual. But then they had someone who like created an algorithm to generate a song for each tree somehow based on its location. So pulling and it just kept getting kind of weirder and weirder. So it was a bit thought provoking and in that regard, a very good talk. And of course it then prompted some discussion about how they calculated the line
The technical...
I don't know if you've ever seen, actually, on YouTube, there have been several shows of people who try to cross a country in a straight line.
No, I never seen
that. They try to go only in the straight line, even that means, you know, going over the buildings and stuff like that. So, which you could say is a form of art, of kind of performance art, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, these talks are, of course, interesting, thought-provoking, sometimes a bit ludicrous. But I particularly enjoyed those types of talks as well. You know, of course, in combination with the other, with the startups and or people working in government and, you know, kind of the bread and butter of, oh, we had this problem and here's how we solved it or whatever. But we need those creative talks as well.
Yeah, I like to run away from the traditional format. So obviously we have a slide deck, but yeah. A slide deck does not mean that you need to have a lot of text. So you can have images, you can have maps, you can have diagrams, and you can have one slide. Some people have like one or two slides and they speak with exactly. One or two slides. So I like this kind of like more free.
What I have noticed over the years, by far the... what decides if it's a good talk or a bad talk is not necessarily the slides or the public speaking ability of the speaker. It's the enthusiasm of the speaker. If the person is excited about this project, whatever the project was,
yes,
you know, whatever it was, if they are excited about it and they can convey their passion for why they were excited, why this was an interesting problem or project or whatever, you know, that's what makes a great GeoMob talk.
That's a really good way of putting it, because the excitement can be anything. It can be obviously when you have a hobby project, there's excitement because you're doing this because you love it, nobody's paying you to do it, so that's obvious. But sometimes you can get people that are, you know, that are academics or something like that, and they can be very excited about the topic.
Sure.
I think I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's the excitement and the way you present it. So it could be something. It could be a super interesting, cutting edge research. But if you go there in a monotonic tone of voice, lots of text in the slides. I mean,
yes, we have had also talks where you think it's going to be a very exciting talk based on the topic, and you know they're just not able to convey the enthusiasm, and you just get bogged down in it. But
and some people are just not good speakers. I mean, they have other skills. They are very good at doing other things. And this is why I think it's good that we have short talks.
that's the whole idea. So, but I mean, one community that as you said, usually people when it's a volunteer project, or, you know, it's not for work or something, the person is by definition is enthusiastic because they wouldn't have done the project, you know, and that's what we see a lot with, people who are heavily involved in OpenStreetMap or kind of the Phosphor-G world or whatever. How is that community in Portugal? Is OpenStreetMap thriving in Portugal? Or
so I'm not very involved with OpenStreetMap, so I cannot tell you about that one. About OSGEO, which will be the Phosphor-G community, I think in Portugal it's very focused in one specific software, which is something that I didn't see in...
is what, QGIS or what?
QGIS, yeah. I don't know if this happens in other countries. I think, for instance, in the UK, it was not like that. And
yeah,
I don't have that
impression. I mean, obviously, people do use QGIS, and there is a QGIS community, but I agree. It doesn't seem like it's just QGIS, kind of.
Yeah, so I think there's... I mean, obviously, this is a valuable focus. But for instance, me, myself, it's not the software that I'm so interested. So I don't think there is a space for other things. So this is one thing. The other thing that I found interesting is the FOSS community. So not only GIS, not only OSGEO, but the free and open source community. I like that community here in Portugal, in particular the Ubuntu community. And I've been kind of like trying to establish more bridges with them and collaborate more with them. And I think this is, for me, this is a positive thing. I mean, it has to be both ways. So the OSGU needs to be, or Phosphor-G needs to be interested in the other one and the other one in OSGU. But I like this way of, getting together with other FOSS communities.
Very nice. Well, hopefully maybe you can get some interesting projects to come to a GeoMob, or just where people just come as attendees maybe, and they going on, and then
they
sparks ideas. And
they already did that. In fact, they already came as attendees, and some of them, funny enough, some of them are doing geo projects, but they are completely outside OSGU, or they are not doing this within the scope of OSGU. So there are some geo projects out there that are FOSS and are not related to OSGU. And I also want to capture those ones. And again, I think GeoMob could be a good venue for that.
I mean, in general, how is GeoMob in Lisbon going? This is the fourth or fifth event, I think. What would how would you say it's going? What's the size of the audience, or what are you happy with the progress? What are the things that you still want to change or adapt? Or
yeah, so I'm very happy with the progress because in the beginning it was very small. I almost had to invite the people personally, the speakers and the attendees. I have to chase them. And now I see, I really like to see that people are coming again. So we have returning attendees. They are bringing some of their friends with them, along with them. So we have a mix of people that are coming from the first time and people that are returning attendees. And that's really nice because you can see that is already like a community. So people know each other from the previous GeoMob. But
that's
the same. It's fantastic. And at the same time, it's growing. And I can see that because I see that I do less and less effort to get speakers. So in the beginning, it was a big effort. Now I still need to make some effort, but it's less effort. So, and some people are volunteering. So I think, from London, you have that experience because London is very successful, right?
Well, having organized London for a long time, but also having been to Lisbon last year, one thing that I really liked about Lisbon, or the smaller communities, is people are more welcoming when you come as a stranger. Like when I was in Lisbon last year, because the community is a bit smaller, everyone realizes, oh, you're new, and thus and then they're very welcoming. Whereas in London, now we often have 60, 70, 80 people at each event, so there's always a fair number of new people. There is a hardcore, of course, of people that are there every time, but there are always lots of new people. And, it's not that anyone is anyway unfriendly to them, but when you're like the one visitor or the one new person, then everyone is very friendly. So I can highly recommend to anyone out there listening who wants to take a trip to Lisbon, and which is a wonderful city, of course, in its own right, but you would combine that with GeoMob, I recommend you do it. So
yeah, and the other thing, you don't need necessarily to be like working in geo right now. Maybe you have an interest in geo, and that's okay because the technical level of the talks shouldn't be very high, should be understandable by anyone. So I would invite anyone to come without thinking that there are some requirements, minimal requirements to attend the
GeoMob. What? Who is your dream GeoMob Lisbon speaker?
Can I just go back and finish the previous? Yes, because you asked me what's working and happy, and I wanted to say the things that I will. Okay, the challenges or the things that I would like to improve in the future, and one of them is like diversity. I think we try to have a diversity of speakers, diversity of backgrounds. I think we can get that. Gender diversity is more difficult to speak. We have in the audience, but in terms of speakers, we don't have it. And I don't know how to solve this. Maybe you have
this is my experience, unfortunately, in almost every city. It's a challenge. It is a challenge in that. I mean, first of all, as an organizer, as you know, of course you're investing time and energy to make this happen, but, this is not your job. And so you don't have, it's a lot of effort to organize in the sense that if qualified speakers volunteer, then it's easy to just say, yes, okay, great. You know, I would love to have your talk. And typically on the gender side, men volunteer.
Yes.
And for whatever reason, we do not have as many women volunteering.
So we need to make an effort to actually approach them.
So then we need to make an effort to try to reach out to women or whatever group it is that we want to have more representation of. I mean, we talked earlier about artists, you know, and things like that.
Exactly.
So the problem is, as I said, it's a challenge. If, you know, there's only so much time you can devote and so much, it needs to work both ways. Like on the one hand, I can chase. On the other hand, people need to also volunteer. Otherwise, it is easy to default to just saying, these four or five people volunteered, I'm just going to take them and I'm done. And I can, we can move on to, planning a great event. So, by the way, we see the same exact thing with the podcast, I have to say.
Really?
It's challenging to get... we have no shortage of speakers volunteering, of certain, let's say, more traditional GIS backgrounds, and yet there is a shortage of other groups volunteering. I have sought feedback on this, and I have done everything possible to try to encourage volunteers. And we've tried to do things like collaborating with groups like Women in Geospatial and things like that, and quite successfully on some occasions. But it's difficult to get a continual momentum going.
Yeah,
I would say. It's just an ongoing continual.
I mean, we can make
struggle.
an invitation here in the podcast to, if any women.
I mean, of course, everyone is always invited to come and talk about their project.
Yeah.
But people also, as I said, people need to appreciate it's not as if organizing GeoMob, it's not that I'm devoting 40 hours a week to organizing GeoMob. It's more like a side project, so there's a limit to how much time and energy an organizer can spend chasing. And more importantly, as we said, what makes a good talk is enthusiasm. So, of course, I can encourage people and say, hey, that's an interesting project. Would love to have you talk about it. But I'm not trying to force someone to speak who doesn't want to speak, because then they won't be enthusiastic.
Yes,
right?
They want to deliver a good speech.
So to a degree, we need to rely on people to bring that enthusiasm themselves. So if anyone has ideas in this regard, I welcome their thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking the other thing will be also age diversity. I would
also
like
what?
Age diversity, like having like people that are very young or older. I would like to also have their experiences, to see what, somehow we tend to have like a...
Yeah, well, the good news is I'm getting older. I'm getting older every
day. Yeah, but not enough for what I had in mind. I had in mind like a bit older. I mean, I want people that are, retired, and they show like, they tell us about how it used to be like back in their time, what they used to do.
Well, your point is valid, especially on... I think a lot of people, so imagine younger people, they might think, I'm not experienced.
Exactly.
I don't have the expertise to bring to this, which may also be the experience of other groups that don't volunteer. There's this perception of like, I'm not,
up to speed.
I'm not up to speed. I'm not good enough, whatever. And I really think that's not the case, because a great talk can be, it doesn't have to be, here's how I did this and here's how I did that. And then we cured cancer. And then this is how I saved the world. A great talk can just be like, here's this fun project I did. Or even it can be, here's this really hard project. Here's this really difficult problem we faced, and we tried this and it didn't work at all. And it was a total failure. Like, that could be a very, very interesting talk. Right. So it's not that, someone needs to be completely polished and finished and, you know, have been a great commercial success or whatever. That's not really not the case at all. You know, it's more just about sharing your story, whatever that story was.
And exactly.
What we can learn from it. So,
So I think we encourage people to, even if they don't have a lot of experience, they're starting their career, whatever, we want to hear from them. And also other people that maybe like retired, but they have great stories to share, we also would love to hear from them.
Sure. All right, well, this conversation has convinced me, Joanna, that GeoMap Lisbon remains in good hands. And I personally am disappointed I'm not going to make it there in a couple weeks. But I will make it back to Lisbon at some point.
I hope so.
And I encourage all of our listeners to go out and check it out. And I hope, Joanna, to see you again at a GeoMap Barcelona or a GeoMap London at some point in the future, or any other city.
For sure.
So any closing thoughts, anything that you want to leave the listeners with about GeoMap Lisbon, about the geospatial scene in Lisbon, anything to wrap things up?
So basically, about GeoMap, as you already stretched, I mean, you don't need to have like cutting edge nature, great research to come here. Just come and bring your project, bring your enthusiasm. And if you want, just come and check it out. I mean, just, you don't need to commit to speak or to commit to anything. You can just come and see, watch the talks and talk to us, grab some beers and that's it. I think it's also a place to meet people and make friends.
Very well said, Joanna. Very well, absolutely true. So I encourage all listeners to get involved. How can people get in touch with you, Joanna? Beyond, obviously, the GeoMap website has a listing for the Lisbon event, but if they have questions, or how should they reach you?
They can reach me through Mastodon. I'm a double byte, and I'm a Nox Social. I think you will add the link.
We'll, of course, have that in the show notes.
Yeah, and I'm a double byte also in Discord.
Okay. Well, thank you once again for coming on the show, for organizing GeoMap Lisbon, and you know, for being a longtime contributor to the GeoMap community.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMap podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomap.com. While you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. Hope to see you at an event soon.